Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is June 20th, 2003. And I have a sponsor and I have a home group. And I live in Falls Church, Virginia. And I'm really grateful to be here. I love this meeting. I've been here several times. And I was honored that Billy asked me to come speak here again. And means I must have done okay the first time. So we'll see. But I, I'm... AA has given me an amazing life, and if you don't relate to me, please keep coming back. My story is just one among millions, and stories of recovery, and this program is really incredible. And so I started drinking at a very early age. My first drunk, I was actually 6 years old. I was at my friend Justin's house, and he lived down the hill and through the woods. He was literally on multiple streets over, but it was sort of a direct shot through the woods. And he lived down there, and we would hang out all the time, and his mom was going out for something in the afternoon, and we had both had colds, and she, I think, wanted us to take a nap because she was leaving her older son in charge. And she gave us some cough medicine, followed by some mint schnapps, and I'm not sure what was going through her head at the time, but Justin and I did not only not take a nap, but we became full of energy and started running around the house. I mean, literally, I was 6 years old, and Justin ended up breaking his arm that day. We got into his sister's makeup, and I had makeup all over me. I had little bangs, and I cut them off, and my house was a little crazy. I grew up in a pretty sick alcoholic home, and that doesn't make me an alcoholic, but I saw really early on that alcohol did something for people, and I knew that this was important. It was an important thing, and I also knew pretty early that this was not, that something wasn't right, and there was an excess going on, and I was not going to do that, but anyway, my mom didn't notice that I had cut my hair for a week, she was doing my hair one morning, and she was like, what is this? Because I'd cut off a little, I don't know, I mean, like an inch worth on the side, and I don't know if I had covered it or what I did, but, we spent the next several hours talking about, well, what happened? And I was like, I don't know. Justin and I took a nap. Maybe he cut my hair. You know, went into this long song and dance, and I got in big trouble that weekend. You know, I had to tell my father what it was all about, and I got grounded for the first time, and that meant, you know, I couldn't watch television and couldn't go out and play with friends that weekend. And I learned very quickly. And my mom said to me, if you only told me the truth, it would have been okay. And I was like, truth, okay. So I learned very quickly, like, tell her enough truth. Like, it would became like a 70% truth. You know, tell her enough truth that I don't get in trouble. And I did that for years. Years and years. And I didn't drink again, probably, I don't know, till I was 13 or something. Occasionally when I would get really sick, I would get something. I was like, is that my phone? It's not my phone. When I would get sick, and I'd get a hot toddy, you know, a little whiskey and honey, and that was great. But I would go to a wedding, and I'd tell everyone that instead of, you know, drinking ginger ale, I was drinking champagne. And, you know, I don't think little kids, I don't know, but I know most little kids when I hang out with, they're not talking about drinking. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, great champagne, you know, and acting as if I were drinking. And you know, in seventh grade, friends of mine were having a sleepover, and they were, some of my friends, she had some non-alcoholic beer, and I just remember being like, "What? Go ahead, drink that." And I'm like sneaking real beers out of the fridge and switching, you know, putting the non-alcoholic beer, and I thought beer was disgusting. I really actually didn't really drink beer all that often, but it wasn't until the very end that I started to acquire a taste for it, because I was like, screw it, you know. And I spent years, you know, I grew up in a small town in Connecticut, and my high school was, my graduating class in my high school was 40 students, so it was very small. And we would come from all over the state, and my parents, you know, my parents separated when I was 13, and drinking kind of be like, in the town that I grew up in, it was semi-acceptable if you were to have a small glass of wine or something with the adults, because this is the safe place to do it. Well, you know, if they're going to drink, I want them to drink with me. And I think about that today, and I'm like, not my kids. Like, I don't have kids yet, but no way. This was a great, you know, we get a little glass of wine here and there. We go to dinner, you know, and I had several friends, and we would all drink the same, and we'd kind of sneak instead of, we'd go out and be like, oh, would you like seconds? And go get seconds for, you know, family members or friends and pour ourselves more wine. And but I didn't really experience any consequences at this time. I mean, I had a lot of fun. It was great. I felt good. People talk about feeling uncomfortable in their own skin, and I absolutely felt that way. I mean, most of my entire life, you know, and alcohol definitely did something for me, but even from a very young age, I was really trying to control it. I really, like, held on because my dad was a blackout drinker, and I experienced, I mean, we would plan trips, and they would get forgotten because they were planned in a blackout, and we would, you know, they wouldn't happen, and, or they'd get pulled together. My mom would pull it all together really quickly to make sure to cover up for what was not working out. And I don't know. I went through high school, no real big consequences. A lot of my friends were getting in trouble, and went on to college. And my first semester in college, I was in. I went down to the College of Charleston in South Carolina, and I didn't want to be there. My boyfriend had just moved to Colorado, and we were bickering because I was like, I think you're an alcoholic. He was a big blackout drinker, and we were having, you know, and he was forgetting things that he was telling me, and he's going to parties and everything. And suddenly I was in Charleston, where the school is, you know, 10,000 people, and the town that I grew up in was only 5,000 people, and I was terrified. And I knew that if I drank the way that I drank throughout high school, that that I would get in a lot of trouble, and I would end up in places I didn't want to end up. And, you know, I was there for a semester, and I couldn't have told you that at the time. I had no idea that I was really trying to control something that I had no control over. I mean, this is all looking back because I'm sober now. But really, it was a very, I was terrified. You know, I knew that I was going to, I mean, I just knew that bad things would happen if I drank the way that I wanted to drink. And I was there for a semester. I got really depressed, and I had been in a car accident 3 days before. When I went off to college, 3 days before I left, my mom told me that they were moving to D.C. And this freaked me out because I felt like my house was like the one stable thing in my life, and I kind of lost it. I mean, I just really got very depressed, and then I stopped trying. I was like trying to stop drinking because I knew I'd get in trouble, and life just got really, really hard. And I withdrew from school after my first semester in South Carolina, and I moved back up to Falls Church, and I lived, you know, and I started seeing doctors and psychiatrists, and they put me on medication, and I laid around for a couple months doing nothing, laying on the couch, looking around, and my mom would come home from work, I mean, just devastated that her daughter is in this state of, like, vegetation. I mean, literally, I just lay there, and I got, like, gained 80 pounds, and I'd be laying there, and she'd be like, do you want to do something? Would you like to, you know, maybe find a job? What about volunteering? I don't care. Get up. You know, it's something. And I'd be like, no, I just can't believe it. You know, I'm laying here and I'm not bored, you know. And it was very scary, and I got pretty suicidal. And my brother started they had just moved there, you know, moved to Falls Church, and they started throwing parties, because we used to throw parties all the time when I was in high school, and they started throwing parties in Falls Church, and we became the party house, and I started drinking again, and I started to feel a little better, and things got a little better, and I started school again, and you know, I didn't feel like I was ready to go back to school, so I, you know, went to Costa Rica for a short period of time, and I was supposed to go down there volunteering, and I ended up being there for only a couple of weeks, and I got sick, and I ended up coming home, and then I went out to California, and I did a number of geographics. You know, I just thought, well, maybe if I go here, I will feel better. Something will change. And I had some really fun times in there, definitely. I mean, alcohol just gave me this incredible sense of, like, I'm an adult. Everything's going to be good. And what ended up happening is I lived in California, and I was starting over one more time, and I moved out to California. I had this great resolve. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to be in college. I've got this new career, you know, new major, and I wanted to study speech pathology, and they had a program out there, and, you know, and I get out there, and I find the friends that I like to find, and we started going to raves, and we started adding, you know, some extra substances into the mix of the drinking, and for a semester, that's what, and I did, and the end of the semester came, and I came out with a 0.0, you know, and this is my great resolve to do something different and to start over, and I came home at Christmas time, and the craziest part about all of this is that I felt no remorse for that at all. I had a huge rationalization and justification that this was okay, and I sat down with my mom, and I was like, I'm sorry, but you know what? This is the first time I get to be a real kid, so it won't happen again, and we're done. And my brother, you know, and I have twin younger brothers, and we drank together a lot, and for years I thought maybe they're alcoholics too, and, you know, I don't know. I think they like to drink, but they don't have consequences like I have consequences, and when something happens, they turn themselves around and go to work, you know, and I don't seem to do that. But my brother freaked out. He couldn't believe that I was coming home with a 0.0, and I was whatever, you know, and I didn't care. And this was 1999, and I went back to school, and I pulled myself together, you know, and I did a little better in school that year. And I stopped partying, and I kept some of those friends, and I kind of got some new friends. So I was like, well, obviously this is bad for me, so I'm going to go do something else. And, you know, and I was in and out of college for the next 4 years. And I would do well for a semester, and then I would do poorly. And I would do well for a semester, and then I would do poorly. And then I would sign up, and I'd go. And the last two semesters, I just didn't go to my finals. I went to class the whole time, and it would be like 2 or 3 weeks before finals, and I would be like, screw it. I can't do this. I can't show up for life. And I started seeing this other psychiatrist at, in California, in Sacramento, and I really wanted him to put me on some, you know, I was like, I have ADD. You need to give me medication for this. And this was an incredible doctor. He made me do biofeedback, where you put a wrap around, you put an electrode around your waist, and you try and match your breathing to your heart rate on this monitor. And because I was having terrible panic attacks, and I was like, I'm panicking. I have ADD. I can't study. And what I was looking for was medication. Like, give me something to numb this and to assist me. And he wouldn't do it. And I was furious. I was like, who is this? And, but, you know, it's good. There are some really good doctors out there. And he just kept being like, do you, and I never mentioned that I drank or was doing any other extracurricular activities. You know, I never told him this. And he would ask, you know, like, what would you say to yourself if you were, you know, trying to, if you were talking to you about what you should do? And I'm thinking to myself, like, stop smoking pot, don't drink, you know, and I'm thinking, but I don't say that. I'm like, sit down, do your work. And he's like, okay, so sit down and do your work. And I was like, no, I can't, you know. It was just ridiculous, but, I mean, I was taking really difficult classes at that time, like Tai Chi, and failing them, you know, and because I couldn't show up, and I'd gotten myself into a little bit of debt. My mom was financially supporting me at the time, and I just kept telling her that California was a very expensive place to live, and oh, Mom, it's really expensive out here. And she was sending me something like $700 a month. And I was blowing it. And I was in like $3,000 in debt because of this. And she couldn't understand. I mean, she knew. She's the great enabler. She, you know, she knew something was up, but she didn't know what. And she couldn't figure out, like, are you helping your friends financially? What are you doing? And, you know, we used to party with the best of them, so you go to the bar and, oh yeah, I'll pay that $300 tab, no problem, you know, and look at what a good person I am, you know, meanwhile, I'm just spending my mother's money, and my mom told me one day, you know, I can't send you this much money anymore, go get a job, you know, and so I started to work at this coffee shop. And there was a guy named Ben at the coffee shop who no longer worked there, but he did their laundry. And Ben was an interesting character. He had this skip in his step, and he had a little glow to him. And I thought, huh, who's that guy? And I worked at this coffee shop for a little over a year, and my drinking was progressing. I would see Ben come in once a week, and someone told me Ben was in AA, and he was sober, and so I kind of filed this away. Well, that's interesting. And when I was 16 years old, my best friend Catherine and I, we went to an AA and Al-Anon meeting because there were one back-to-back, and we went to check this out for our parents. Her mom was an alcoholic who couldn't get sober. I hope she's doing better today, but I know she would go in and out like 30, 60, 90 days. And we come from a very affluent area in Connecticut. And when I was like 17 years old, the wife of a doctor, I mean, she's sitting in jail for 3 or 4 days because she can't stay sober. And Catherine was devastated by this. And my dad, you know, is calling me up, telling me about his ideas of suicide and, oh, I got a DUI the other day, and so we went to go check it out, and we were sitting in the Al-Anon meeting, and this woman looked at both of us and was like, we're glad you're here, you stay here, but you go to that AA meeting next, and we didn't know what we were doing or what we were there, and it was a big book study, and they read the big book, and they talked about a higher power, and they talked about God in the big book, and I was like, close that book right up. We're never coming back here again. I don't know anything about God, but I don't want to know either. So all I knew is that I was sitting in a church, and they talked about God in the big book, and I was done. And so I met Ben, and let's see. One day, and somewhere in April or May, I had, I think it was like April 20th, you know, I had skipped school, and 420 is a big thing for smoking pot, if you don't know, but, and I hadn't eaten anything all day, I'd been drinking, and I had just taken this big bong hit, and I passed out, and I fell through a wall, and and I didn't wake up for a little over a minute, I was told, but what I awoke to was my friends on the phone with 911 saying, no, you know, my friends, saying, no, we don't need an ambulance. We just need to know how to wake her up. And I'm laying on the ground. I can't move, and I can't open my eyes. And I'm like, I'm awake. Don't hang up. It's okay. And they're like, oh, thank God, we got to go. She woke up, and they hung up the phone. One of them was a really good friend. He made me go to the emergency room. I put a huge hole in their wall. I mean, I went right through it. And I quickly acquired the name Crash. And and I went to the emergency room that day, and this guy told me, the doctor comes in, and you know, I really ruined his day. I mean, I was just a waste of air for him. You know, he looks at me, and he's like, you got to eat regular meals, stop smoking pot, and stop drinking, and you'll be fine. And I was just like, oh, man, now this is on my medical record. This is terrible. Not thinking I'm doing anything bad to myself or not thinking I may be causing damage, but just like, oh, now the public's going to know, you know, and, or the government. I don't know. I was getting pretty paranoid at the time. I was getting really paranoid, and I was a mess, and I had acquired some friends who, over the years, I had been prescribed, you know, some different medications, and I had held on to this drawer of medications, and I acquired this friend, you know, and it was very important that I had friends that were just a little worse than I was, or just drank a little more, or couldn't hold their liquor, or caught, you know, just really caused a ruckus. So I had someone to point and be like, well, at least I'm not like him, you know, and my friend Kevin and I became fast friends, and he and I would show up at the parking lot of school, and we'd start partying in the parking lot, and we'd never get to school, and then we'd wait about 3 hours, and we were like, well, we just gotta calm this down, you know, like the panic of going to class because I haven't done any of my schoolwork in the last 3 months or anything, and then we'd leave, and Kevin and I really went down together hard, and you know, I was right before, so I meet Ben, and I've passed out through this wall, and Trina, the owner of the house where I passed out, her mom was a heroin addict, and was trying to get sober. She had gotten off of heroin finally, and she was still drinking, and she had finally, after I guess 10 years, gotten off of methadone, and Trina wanted to help her mom, and she said, you know, I think I'm going to let my mom come up here for a little while. She wants to get sober and go to AA. Do you know where any AA meetings are? And and I told her, well, this all came about because she went to a rehab meeting, and in rehab, they told her that, for the families, and they told her that alcoholics run together, and that families of alcoholics run together, and that we're all attracted to each other, and the sickness follows each other, and she was like, is there any alcoholism in your life? And I just laughed. I mean, I was like, are you kidding? Yes, it's rampant. It's everywhere. And I told her all about my dad and my family, never mentioning myself or anything like this. And because I really didn't think it was me, you know. And she was like, well, I'd really like to find a meeting. And I said, oh, I have this friend, Ben. Let me ask Ben. He'll show me where our meeting is. And Ben, the next day I saw Ben, and I asked him, I was like, oh, my friend Trina, her mom wants to get sober. You know, I went through the whole song and dance. This is not for me, really telling you. And he just looked at me, he's like, it's in the phone book. You know, go find it. And I was like, well, you know, I thought you were supposed to be nice to me. You know, like, I'm asking you about AA. And I don't know where I got that idea. It was certainly not from any knowledge or anything. And then the next day, I was like, no, really, you go to AA meetings. I need to know where a good meeting is. I'm not going to, I can call a phone book, whatever, but, and he just looked at me, and he was like, what about you? He's like, you get messed up every day. What's wrong? What about you? And I was like, me? Well, and I was actually having a bad day, and I was like, well, yeah, because it was somewhere in July, and, 2002, and I was, I was getting nervous because school was going to start again soon, and I had been asked to leave, and I had run out of excuses. When I was asked to leave the time before, I had my litany of why I'm a victim and why my life is a real big problem and why you should let me back into school. And when the woman at the admissions office read it, she, like, got a little teary. It was like, why didn't you withdraw, honey? It's okay. You know, because I was really good at putting on the innocent look of, like, it's not me, it's my life. My life is a mess, it's not me. And I didn't have any of those excuses anymore. I mean, I had all the same excuses, but they had nothing to do with my life. And I knew this. And Ben and I talked for about 30 days. And he was like, what about you? And I told him, you know, oh, yeah, I think I have a problem. But really, I don't think it's the drinking. I think it's the pot. And he was like, okay. So we were talking, and he was so nice to me. You know, he talked to me about AA, and I was really angry with God, and he directed me to some books, like just novels, about that talked about a loving higher power in the books. And I read these books, and I was like, wow, you know. And he started to get me back to this, you know, in the big book it talks about in every man, woman, and child, the fundamental idea of God. And he got me back to that, you know, back to, because when I was a little kid, I believed that. I believed that there was some higher power, something there. but, you know, when my grandfather died when I was little, and my mom had said, pray, you know, and I prayed and he died, and I was like, well, that didn't work, you know. And when I was in Costa Rica having surgery, I had my appendix out when I was in Costa Rica. That's why I ended up coming back. And I was in this hospital where everyone spoke Spanish, and they sent, you know, one of the nuns or someone over to come pray with me before my surgery. And she's like, who do you pray to? And I was like, oh, I pray to my uncle, because he had passed away. And the woman told me that was wrong. My uncle was dead, that I had to pray to Jesus. And I was like, we're done. You know, I'm out. Forget it. Forget all of you. And anyway, so Ben helped me to get back there, and I bought the big book from Barnes & Noble, and I read the first 164 pages, and I was really pissed when I got to the 12th step, because that meant that Ben was required to do this. He was required to help me. He wasn't doing it out of his own goodwill. He was doing it so he could stay sober. I mean, that's how self-centered I was. I was so sick. Like, and thinking, oh, I mean, it was terrible. And so Ben challenged me after 30 days, and he was like, you know, we can't continue to talk like this forever. And I thought I was really, like, attracted to him. I was like, oh, I have this huge crush on this guy. Like, and he said, you know, we can't talk about this forever. He said, why don't you try and stay sober for 7 days? And if you can do it, fine. We won't talk about this again, you know. And I started, I had never tried to stop. I mean, why would I? I'm not an alcoholic. Who, you know, I don't have a problem. And, I mean, I had challenged some of my friends previously to stop, and I stopped with them. But that was many years prior. Let me rephrase that. I would stop with them for a night, and I would tell them they need to do this for a couple weeks or something. anyway, so I started to try and stop, and school was starting in 2 weeks, and I was like, Ben, these are the last 2 weeks for me to party. I've got to get myself together. And he's like, and he just laughed at me. He's like, is it your birthday? Is there some big celebration? Do you celebrate a holiday? And I was like, no. And he's like, normal people do not have problems stopping for a week. It's not a big deal. And this, I mean, I was terrified. And so I proceeded to, like, get gear up to stop. And I was doing, like I said, extracurricular activities. And I, those were kind of not as, for some reason, not as difficult for me to kick off right away. And and I was drinking every day at this point. You know, and I stopped for like 3 days, and I got so tense and so anxious. And Ben came in on the first day, and he's like, how you doing? And he was really excited about this, you know, and he was very happy. And he started to leave, and I was like, no, you can't leave me, you know. And I'm at work. Like, I am an assistant manager at this job. Not an assistant manager, like one step below assistant manager. But I was in charge of the store, and I was, like, holding onto the table trying to count money, just shaking, just, like, freaky. And I don't know if I was detoxing. I mean, I'm sure I was detoxing, but I was also just terrified, just physically, internally terrified. And he's as cheerful as he could be, waiting to see how I'm going to react to all this. And And I was like, you come sit down right here and talk to me, because I was dying, you know. And he's like, it's going to be okay, you know. And he's like, you think you might have a problem? I was like, no, I'm fine, you know. So I stayed sober for 3 days, and then I had a really bad day at work, and I went and got loaded. And I had a great time that night. It was a lot of fun. And about 3 months prior to all of this, they talk about, like, crossing a line. And I tell you, I spent years it's so sad to me, because I spent years trying to control this. And one day I was out at a bar, and I had that feeling, like, this is the line where we always, like, I make it stop, and then I get pissed, and I go home, and I'm angry, or I don't know, or I tell somebody, we're done, and I blew through it that night, and what I found out was friends of mine were taking pictures, and that was the night I think I started blacking out, and that was my big line in the sand, you know, like, I did not want to be a blackout drinker, and here I was. And now I've crossed every line that I ever set for myself. And it's great. I mean, and for those next 3 months, you know, and then I ended up in AA. It was great. So I'm trying to stay sober for 7 days, and I can't do it. And suddenly I'm 2 weeks into school, and I had started drinking wine, because wine is not... it's not rum and coke, and it's not whatever. I'm Long Island iced tea, that's what I love to drink. It's like, what do I like to drink? That was my thing. Like, I'd go to a bar and order two and to start. And then we'd have some other fun things afterwards. And so I was drinking wine, and I'm like, this doesn't even count. I mean, they drink this at church. You know, it's like, whatever. I'm just going to have a small glass so I can start my homework. And a bottle later, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to feel a little better. And I didn't know this at the time. First, I thought I was staying sober. I really did. I thought I was keeping a journal, 4 days sober today, drank tonight, you know. My roommate came home after I got loaded one night, she came home the next morning, she showed me these pictures, and I blacked out, and it scared the crap out of me. You know, I was, suddenly, here I was, doing exactly what I had said I would never do, and I saw that clearly, you know, and I had made my roommate, Daniel, really angry the week before. I had smoked pot in his house, and his mother came over an hour later, and, you know, everybody knows what it smells like, so... he was really embarrassed, and he's like 40 years old, and he was a really good friend. And I was starting to really damage people. And I was in California, 3,000 miles away, not calling my parents, not talking to them. I see Ben, and Ben was like, "Are you done yet? Like, really? Like, this is painful to watch." And he told me he was leading a meeting, and he was going to tell part of his story. And I really wanted to hear Ben's story. I wanted to know what this was all about. I went to this meeting, and it was on a Monday night, and they had double booked the speaker, and Ben didn't lead. And I was like, oh man, this is terrible. I really just wanted to hear Ben. And people started to share, and I related, and I knew immediately that I was in the right place. I was not happy to be there. But I knew, you know, I'm like, I am not a joiner. I don't join groups. This is not for me. They're talking about a higher power. I no. But I knew I was in the right place, and I knew I needed help. I didn't go to another meeting until the following week, when Ben was going to speak. But I stayed sober because I was not going to let these people think that I couldn't stay sober. And suddenly, a group of alcoholics, I mean, I was like, I'm going to do it. And I am sure I was a joy to be with, really. I can only imagine. But I told everyone in my work that I was getting sober. I would not do that today. I'd saved my life, I think, at the time, because I drank with almost everybody and partied with almost everybody I worked with. And my manager looked, the assistant manager, he looked at me, he's like, my wife's sober. And then next week he came back, he's like, I wasn't supposed to tell you that. And I was like, I won't say anything. I was so grateful. I was so grateful, though, that somebody was so sweet to tell me that they're, you know, that they, someone they loved was an AA. And I didn't tell anybody. I was like, okay, thanks, my secret, you know. And I went to a meeting the next week, and Ben was like, you have to get a sponsor. And I was like, well, can you sponsor me? He's like, no. You know, and he had 8 years sober, and I'm like, why not? And he's like, no, get a woman sponsor. Have 5 or more years, and, you know, find somebody who's got a program. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And he's like, you'll know it when you see it. And I asked this woman to sponsor me, and she, the first woman I asked, she's like, yeah, I'll call you tomorrow. And I was like, okay, well, what's your number? She gave me her number. I called her. She never called me back. And so week three, my first sponsor, Kristen, led the meeting, and she had 10 years sober at the time, and she saved my life. You know, we started getting together once a week and going to meetings, and we sat down, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic when I got here. I was like, I'm an addict, that's it. I liked that word a lot better. Alcoholic, that was something we called my dad, not me. And she sat down with me at the coffee shop, and she said, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and this is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're an addict, you got to go somewhere else, you know. And I was like, okay, I'm an alcoholic, because I needed this woman. I knew, I was like, I like you, we're done. And and I am an alcoholic. There are no worries about that. You know, and but we started going through the big book in 12 and 12 and started taking the steps. And she went very slowly with me, you know, and she was so kind. And she was like, I recommend you go to a meeting every day. And I looked at her like she had 3 heads. And she said, well, you work and go to school. How about 5 days a week? And I did 3. And that was my first mistake, you know. But I didn't have a complete first step. You know, and I always told people that I stayed sober for the first 9 months, and that's not quite true. I smoked pot in there, I think, about 3 times. And I moved when I had, just before I was going to have 9 months sober, because I wasn't drinking. We had gone to war again, like the Iraq War. It's 2003, and Iraq War number 2, and they're threatening to bomb D.C., and my parents are in D.C., and, I mean, I'm crazy, you know, and I'm like, I gotta go back to D.C. I can't be here. I want to go home, you know. I want to be with my family. And my mom was having some health problems, and she said, I'll make you a deal. You come home, you help me out a little bit, we'll help you out, you can go back to school, things will get together. And you know, when I had somewhere in that 9 months, about 6 months sober, or 6 months into it, I woke up one day and I was like, I'm supposed to become a nurse, you know, and I don't know what that is or where it comes from, but it's true, like, I'm supposed to become a nurse. And so I was like, okay, I'll come home, I'll go to nursing school. And anyway, I came home, and I went to a meeting, and there were 6 people in the meeting. So my sponsor, Kristen, she had me write about this. She's like, you're a runner. I know you're a runner. Write about this. I don't want you running. And you know, and I had done a 4th and 5th step with her, and I was like, I'm not running. I got to go home. And I was running. I didn't know it, but I was running for my 8th and 9th step. And she, anyway, I came home, and I went to one meeting in Fairfax, and there were about 6 people there, and they all knew each other, and 2 of us were from out of town. And so there were 5 people who regularly attended this meeting, and I was like, if this is AA in Virginia, I don't want this. I'm screwed. Like, and I don't know. I mean, it's probably a great meeting, but that's me. I was very judgmental. And, I mean, they had the guy from out of town share his story, and he did a great job, and I never went back, and I didn't go to another meeting for 5 weeks. And in that 5 weeks, I got more and more insane. I was taking this class that I've taken again in sobriety, and it's difficult the second time I took. I mean, I was taking anatomy and physiology, and it's challenging regardless, but I was nuts. I mean, I wasn't going to meetings. I was praying. I was full of fear and panic, and my brothers came home for summer break from college, and they're like, let's go to a bar. And I was like, okay. So we went, And I ended up, I didn't drink that night, but I came home and I wanted to go. It was time to go. And I was like, I got to get out of here because I knew I was going to drink. And my brother was not ready to go. He wanted another drink because, and he's like, if we go home right now, you smoke pot with me and we can go. And I was like, all right, we're done. And that's what I did. And I don't know why I didn't drink that night. I really think it was the grace of a higher power, because if I drank, I wouldn't be standing here. You know, I know that. Like, I am powerless over alcohol. And that really showed me. And anyway, the next day, I had been to two meetings. I went to another one at the Unity Club, and this woman circled a bunch of meetings where my home group is today, and she's like, you find these people. She's like, you stay away from the men, but you find these people. And I was like, okay. So, but they talked about going to meetings in Maryland and D.C., and I'm living in Virginia, and I was like, why would I cross state lines? No, I'm not going to do this. And the Friday night Virginia meeting, the Friday night meeting called Ought Not Be Organized was in Virginia, and I was like, I can get there. And I had one day sober, and I told everyone I had 9 months, and I met my sponsor there, you know, and I saw my sponsor, Debbie, was there that night, and I talked to her, and then she went to Icky Pot for 2 weeks, and she was in Seattle or something, and I didn't see her again. This girl who was like 16 years old offered to be my sponsor, and I was like, no, we can't have that, so I got a different sponsor, and, you know, my pride was so big. It was just... I was a mess, but they all couldn't figure, you know, I was telling them I had 9 months sober, and they're like, who is this girl? Like, I mean, I was shaking and definitely new, and about 2.5 months later, you know, I had my sponsor, and we were starting to go through the steps again, and I was about to come up on a year, and I knew I couldn't celebrate a year sober without telling her the truth. You know, you can't have a year if you don't have a year, and that was, thank goodness for me, and I got honest, and I told this guy, and he was like, you're still here, it's okay, you didn't die over this one, and it was true, and from there, it was amazing, you know, like, I got to start afresh, and start new, and be thoroughly honest, and I was, you know, I knew for sure that I was an alcoholic, and that I knew this program. And we started going through the steps, and, you know, a lot has happened. A lot has happened in the last 5.5 years or so. And I've gone through the steps with my sponsor, and, you know, I am fortunate enough to sponsor other women. And we did a fourth and a fifth step, and I had done one with my first sponsor, Kristen. And, you know, but when I did this with Kristen, I didn't really believe that I was powerless over alcohol, and I still thought I was a victim. I really thought, like, if my family wasn't the way it was, I wouldn't be this way. And when I did my fourth and fifth step this time, you know, I had been around enough people, and I'd heard their stories, and I'd heard the truth, and there was no denying my part in every single one of the relationships with my family, you know, and the damage that I caused. And I caused a lot of damage, you know. When I was, like, 13, I told my dad, I, like, wrote him off. And that's, you know, interesting. It's like, that's where my drinking started, when I wrote him off. And the great thing, you know, my dad, I've made amends with all my family, and I have a couple little amends. I think when I spoke here a couple years ago, I had these fiddly little amends that I was still holding on to, and I still have a couple of them, but I spent the last 2 years working on this present for a friend of mine. You know, my sponsor's like, keep it simple, and I don't keep very much simple, unfortunately. I make it really hard for myself, and I made this cross stitch, and it's pretty simple for anybody who does this regularly, but it was hard for me, and I've just finished it, you know, it's like, which is crazy, you know, it's wonderful, so hopefully she'll get that in the next 2 weeks or so, but that's the thing, it's like, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, you know, but the relationship with my dad, you know, I don't know about my dad, I know he struggles with a lot of things. And about a year ago, let's see, in 2007 was like a boomer year for me. You know, when I got here, I hated men. I thought all of you, I didn't see a lot of healthy relationships growing up, and I didn't think they were really worthwhile, and I really thought I was going to be like a single mom with, I don't know, like a hippie commune or something. I don't know what I was thinking, but, you know, and after being here for about a year, I met, some of you know him, I met Bill, and he's like got 13 years now and in this program, and we started dating, and I mean, I just was terrified. I was like, I don't know about this. I'm not really interested. Thank you very much. And, you know, my higher power does some amazing things, you know, and we, I mean, when I got here, I hated men, and today I'm married, you know, and I was like, how did that happen? You know, and through a lot of work, really, but, but he's a joy, and he's amazing, and, you know, the crazy thing is like, I mean, we're so happy, we're really happy, and I never knew that was possible, you know, for me, and, I mean, I thought it was great for all of you. Yeah, no problem, you can have whoever you want. Not for me, I'm going to stay solo, thank you, because this is too painful, but we have to do a couple things. I mean, starting off in our relationship, we make sure, you know, AA always comes first. You know, I have a higher power, I have a sponsor, and then I have a husband. And it goes in that order. And it has to, because if I don't have a good relationship with my sponsor, who's one of my closest linkages to my higher power, then I'm in big trouble. And then I become, like, the leech that could on my husband. Because I definitely struggle with that sometimes. But, you know, my dad, about a year ago, he, a little over the place, but about a year ago, he ended up in the psych ward, and some people from AA started to help him out a little bit. And I don't think he's sober today, but our relationship is better than it's ever been, you know, and that's because of this program. I was able to make amends to him for my wrongs, and I was able to forgive his, and we have an incredible relationship today, you know, like, I call him up, and we actually have a real conversation, you know, and that was not possible before, and the amazing, you know, people can still be sick, and it's like, okay, they're sick, that's fine, I'm sick too, and learning, you know, I was about 3 years sober is when I really discovered, oh my God, I'm really sick. Like, it took me that long to kind of look around and be like, oh, this is me, really me, you know, I do these things, and you know, but I've been able to show up for my family and be a part of their lives, and it's incredible, you know, and people in AA have taught me you have to give this away to keep it, and you know, and AA comes first. I go to a meeting pretty much every day, and I've gone back and worked on several steps, like 6 and 7 was the most recent thing. I started to trust in my higher power a lot more, and when that happened, I was very protective and prideful of myself, and when that happened, I started being a little defective everywhere, and I became this little defective bug, and my sponsor was like, what is going on here? So I had to go back and look at some things, and it's amazing, you know, it's amazing to be able to grow here and to change, and I don't know, sobriety is an incredible gift, and I never, I don't know, if somebody told me a couple years ago that this would have been my life, I would have been like, that's so cheesy, forget it, I'm done, you know, I'm not interested. But I feel better today than I've ever felt in my whole life. And I was in a 7-step meeting yesterday, and this woman was talking about, in the 7-step and the 12 and 12, it talks about pain is a fact. And that hit me, I mean, right between, in my heart, because I've had some things, you know, I'm working on getting into nursing school, and it's been like my path. I keep changing my mind. I'm going to be a physical therapist. I'm going to be a speech pathologist. I'm going to, I don't know, anything. And really, like, nursing is a path. But I screwed up my transcripts very well. And and they're a mess. And so I spent the last, you know, couple of years trying to repair that a little bit. And so now I'm sort of in this waiting mode, like, what's happening now? And I freaked out. I panicked. I was like, I don't know, you know, I'm 30 years old, I'm just this little fledgling in sobriety. Like, where am I going? What's happening to me? And my first problem is that it's all about me. You know, who cares? Like today I look at him like, who cares? You're sitting amongst a bunch of people who are alive, who shouldn't be alive, you know, and who are living a really good life. But a couple weeks ago I was terrified and trembling and feeling like, where is this higher power that says it's taking care of me, and where am I going? What's going to happen? And, you know, and I don't know what the path is, but I certainly know that I'm on it. But anyway, this woman yesterday was talking about pain, and pain is a fact. And that really hit me because I spent years trying to numb the pain, trying to drink it away, you know, bury it. No pain. And to have someone with long-term sobriety be like, pain is a fact. This is going to happen to you. Like, something will hurt you. And to know that I'm taken care of no matter what is an incredible gift. And to feel safe, like, to know that if I turn around and I'm like, oh, my God, something real is happening, all of you will be standing there with me, you know, and that I'm not alone anymore. And I've never been alone, you know, that I put myself in that place. So anyway, I think that's all out of me. I'm really grateful to be here, and thanks for letting me share.